Welcome to The Impact Project, the best podcast for young millennials to learn about and get involved in the business of sustainability, impact investing, and all things for purpose. My name is Ray, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Lucy. Lucy, how are you?
I'm good. Today, we're joined by Pablo Baruti. He's a senior investment specialist of the Sustainable Funds Group at Stewart Investors, the founder of Altiorum.
In this episode, we hear about Pablo's unconventional career journey from working in the hospitality industry to leading impact investing portfolios and building an impact community. We then discuss the trend of ESG and impact investing in recent years, as well as the role that education can play in reshaping a more sustainable way of doing business. Most of all, we really enjoyed hearing about his advice on how we, as individuals, can go about creating positive impact. Now let's dive right in. Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us today, Pablo. We're really grateful to have you here with us today. How's your day been?
Really good. It's been really windy here in Sydney, but it looks like it's going to be a nice Saturday, so looking forward to the weekend.
Yeah, always love the weekend, right? So we thought we'd start the podcast off just getting to understand a bit more about your journey and a bit more about yourself as well and how you got to where you are today.
Sure. So I guess it's somewhat unconventional because I didn't finish school, go to university, get a job, get promoted, get another promotion, move to another company, like that sort of career progression that you ordinarily see. So I left school early for a whole range of different reasons that I won't get into and worked in hospitality for a decade. And after that period, I was just sort of getting into sort of senior manager roles, but couldn't deal with the hours and the type of work. I just kind of wanted to do something different, and I was fortunate to move into a call center because sort of relatable skills in terms of customer service and working for a call center for a bank, for Commonwealth Bank and Cominsure there, and that sort of led to a whole range of different opportunities presenting themselves that got me into risk management. And somehow, and I'm not sure why, I was just a particularly good risk manager. And, you know, I don't know how someone who's at school or at uni would aspire to be or think about risk management as a career. But for whatever reason, I guess there's a certain type of mindset that comes with that type of role that just suited me really well. And I really enjoyed that. But then I had kids and when I was 27, we had our daughter, and I'd always been really concerned about sustainability issues. I'd already been always been really concerned about the environment, and having our first child, it just made it incredibly immediate to me the responsibility that I had, that we had, to deal with these issues for future generations. And what more could I do? And I started looking around the way that we operated, and at that time I was working for a fund manager called Perpetual. And thinking about my role as a risk manager, and I started thinking about climate change as a risk. And this was sort of around the time of Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth, so sort of 2006, 2005, that sort of period, 2007. And it occurred to me that we weren't actually thinking about climate change as a risk at all. And back then, actually, no one was really thinking about it from a corporate or a financial institution perspective as a risk. At that time, the principles for responsible investment was brand new in 2006. There was investors who were investing ethically, and Perpetual had an ethical fund, but that was this kind of thing that was a separate vehicle that certain people would go into, but it didn't really relate to how we thought about the business as a whole and about all of our investing as a whole. And so that seemed a problem to me, and as a risk manager I thought that was a flag that I should raise and start working on. And so I started doing the internal advocate thing of preparing presentations, writing papers, talking to a lot of people, trying to get engagement around, well, why if climate change is a risk, why isn't it a risk that's on our risk register? Why aren't we reporting it to the board? Why aren't we incorporating it into our investment strategy? And it took a little while. There was a good couple of years of advocacy there and trying to bring people along for the ride. But no, a lot of these things aren't fast processes. But in the end, it actually turned into a role, which was a head of responsible investment role at Perpetual. And that's really where my career shifted very dramatically, because that concern that I had about the future of my children, because we had two by that point, about environmental issues that I'd always felt passionate about, and my career in finance and risk management, which was which I'd been doing for a number of years at that point, all seemed to come together into this role around responsible investment and sustainable investing. And so that's kind of really the point at which everything seemed to change for me. And being able to work in a role where you're passionate about what you're doing, where you are trying to make a difference, a positive difference, not just for your organization, but also for the world around you, where you have really strong values alignment, that they're all really important motivators, because you do those types of jobs really well. And you put a lot of energy in those types of jobs for obvious reasons. And so then over time, I started picking up board positions. So I was the chair for a while of the Responsible Investment Association of Australasia. I'm still on the board now. I was on the management committee of the Investor Group on Climate Change, and really became focused on industry engagement and how do we actually bring the whole industry along for sustainable finance and sustainable investment. Then a couple of years ago, I think through recognizing that as hard as I was working at it, and as hard as all of the other people that I knew and my network were working at it, the industry wasn't moving quickly enough, and that there, if you weren't a sustainable investment specialist or a responsible investment specialist, it's quite hard, because so say you're trying to launch products, or you're a product manager, or you're a strategy person, or you're an investment analyst. You already in that role have a lot of things which you're having to think about in the traditional context of those jobs, without trying to bring in climate risk or human rights risk or all of these other issues. And the way that information on these issues is presented to people, it is quite technical. There's large bodies of research there. It's really hard to pick through. So there seemed to be a real gap to me in terms of how do you practically apply this, and how do you help people who don't have sustainability in their title to implement the changes that need to be made, and to be advocates like I was, you know, 15 years ago, for the changes that needed to be made. And that's where the idea for Altiorum came along. And so Altiorum, which means higher in Latin, it's we're trying to find a higher purpose for finance, is a library and resource centre that's dedicated to helping people working across the finance industry who aren't necessarily sustainability specialists to understand the relevance of sustainability issues to finance, and to help them become more effective advocates and more effective in their roles in terms of incorporating sustainability principles into finance. And that pretty much brings us up to today.
That's such an amazing journey, and it seems like you've been involved in early stages of sustainable finance in Australia, and you've seen through the evolution and development of it throughout the past 10 years or so, and it must be amazing to see that it's really becoming more mainstream now, and there are a lot more discussions, I guess.
That's a good thing. I think it depends on how, like, so the thing I'd say to that, and the momentum's been massive, and the change has been massive, and it certainly didn't start 10 years ago. I mean, there's people who I have a huge amount of respect for who I wouldn't have been able to build the career that I've had to date without them having done the work that occurred before me. And actually, Responsible Investment Association is 20 years old this year, and so it does extend back further than that. But the success of it, I think you need to measure, or the way I think about it is that I measure it against how well are we doing in terms of the impact on the issues that we need to have. And so it's great to see the growth. It's great to see the mainstream acceptance. It's great to see more funds flowing into sustainable investment options, but emissions, COVID notwithstanding, are still going in the wrong direction. We're still seeing investment flows into industries which are ultimately destructive or impacting negatively on people's human rights. We're not seeing the delivery of the sustainable development goals the way that we need to, or at the speed we need to. I think that's the big thing, is the speed of change isn't fast enough. And so absolutely, we have to be grateful for all the good stuff that's happened, but we need to actually accelerate that change. There's no time to kind of get complacent about it.
Mm.
Awesome. Yep. So I think, it's, I guess, a really interesting perspective to hear about from the perspective of someone who's been inside the industry. And that it's not actually that easy as it seems, even though it's been growing so quickly. Thanks so much for giving us that insight as well, because when we see a lot of the news these days, it seems like it's gaining a lot of momentum and that it's heading in the right direction. But I think your reflection really highlights that there's just so much more work to be done. And I think that's an important takeaway for so many of us out there.
Definitely. There's a lot of good news there to get behind. And so one of the things that I think is quite extraordinary and probably the best story that we've seen in this space is the cost competitiveness of renewable energies technologies versus fossil fuels, and things which we talked about years ago in terms of the end of peak demand in coal, for instance, peak demand in oil. I mean, these things are happening today, and it's largely as a result of investment and the price declines in cleaner technologies. And so we can look at those shifts and say that if we can accelerate those quickly enough, then we can deliver on all of the objectives that we have in terms of sustainable development.
So I think there are quite a few really interesting experiences that you mentioned. So maybe before we'd have a look at some of the, or get a better insight into some of the really interesting ones that you mentioned. So one thing you mentioned was your role at the RIAA. And so we wanted to get a bit of an understanding of what it's like, what the RIAA is all about, and I guess a bit about your role there as well.
Sure. So RIAA, or RIA, as I call it, the Responsible Investment Association of Australasia, has been around for 20 years or so. As I mentioned, I joined the board as a director 9 years ago, and so in next year will be my final year. We're capped at 10 years max, and it's been quite an amazing journey over the course of the decade that I've been involved. So RIA does a few different things. So RIA provides certification for sustainable finance or sustainable investment and financial products, and it's there really to make sure that consumers of products, people looking to invest sustainably, can have confidence that the products they're investing in are doing what they say that they do. And there's a wide diversity of different types of sustainable investment options, and so having that that layer of assurance is really important. RIA also benchmarks the industry in terms of funds flowing into sustainable investment, the performance of sustainable investment funds versus regular funds, superannuation, and also impact investing more recently. So that benchmarking role is also incredibly important in that it keeps us all honest, but it also shows the progress that we're making, and it shows, importantly, I think most importantly, is that this myth that has persisted for a very long time that investing sustainably is going to produce lower returns, or you have to make some sacrifices, is completely false. That there's no need to make a financial sacrifice by investing sustainably, and indeed, in many cases, if you find the right manager, if you have the right strategy, and you should definitely talk to your financial advisor about it. But you can make as good or better returns in sustainable investment options. And RIA has been really important in being able to put the evidence for that out into the marketplace and make it more well known. The last bit is RIA is a convener of investors. And so all of this area has been evolving and changing a lot over the years. And as I mentioned, there are a growing number of sustainable investment specialists across the industry. And so there's dedicated roles sitting within most of the large fund managers and most of the large superannuation funds these days. But spreading that knowledge throughout the organisation is going to take a lot of additional work. And what RIA does by bringing people together is allow those specialists more than most to come together and really talk about different ideas and different strategies for implementing change and being able to see where certain issues are going to impact their organisations, and to collaborate on different issues. And that's that collaboration aspect is really important when you're trying to grow an industry the way that we're trying to grow sustainable investment and sustainable finance. Mm-hmm. In terms of my role there, so as a director, my role, I'm elected by members of RIA. My role, along with the other 12 directors, is to oversee the operations of RIA, to approve strategy, to appoint the CEO, to act in the interest of RIA, manage risks. And as chair, there was, I guess, additional responsibilities that specifically related to having that close relationship with the CEO, Simon O'Connor, and being an extra support to him and running board meetings and really taking the lead, I guess, on that discussion around strategy, risk management, overseeing the financials, those types of things. And so we've seen a lot of change in the organisation over the years. And so it was a very interesting and sometimes challenging period to be a director and to be the chair of RIA, because when I started, we had just two staff, and now there's I'm going to get the number wrong, but I believe it's about eight at the moment. There are some part-time people and also some full-time people. So, and they're spread now across Melbourne and Sydney, whereas we used to be just Sydney-based. And so a huge amount of growth in the number of members, the number of staff, the different activities that RIA is involved in. So it's been a great time to be part of that organisation.
Talking about collaboration and, I guess, democratising sustainable finance to the general public, another experience that we found really interesting and would love to know more about is this organisation that you created called Altiorum, if I pronounce
it. Altiorum, yes.
When you first talked about it in my class as a guest lecturer, I was very fascinated by the idea, and I'm sure that many of our listeners would be as well. So could you please tell us a little bit more about it and maybe share with us the story behind creating it?
Absolutely. I do love talking about Altiorum. So what we're trying to do with Altiorum, and so for those of your listeners who haven't visited the website or haven't heard of it before, it's altiorem.org. Altiorum.org is the web address. Membership is free, and it is a library and resource centre dedicated to making the connection between the big sustainability issues and the finance and business areas. And so what we're trying to do is a couple of different things. The first thing that we want to do is to recognise that across the finance sector, and it's a globally relevant resource, we want Altiorum to be available to people all around the world who are interested in these issues. So you're talking about tens of millions of people who are working in and around finance around the world, many of whom care about climate change, many of whom care about human rights or biodiversity loss or other issues that are impacting on people all around the world today. But they don't necessarily know how to connect that into their day jobs, as I was sort of talking about earlier, in terms of how do you make that connection between being a risk manager and the risks of climate change. It's a bit easier now than perhaps what it was before, but it's still something which is not necessarily taught, or at least and historically wasn't really taught in depth at university. And even now, it's probably not as integrated sustainability into business degrees and into finance degrees as what people like me would like to see. And so Altiorum is there to help people who care about these issues to be able to advocate for them effectively. And the way that we do that is we collect the information, we collect the leading research that's out there together, we categorise it according to what is the case for change that this research helps you make. And so we talk about the ethical case, the business case, the investment case, and the economic case. And I can talk a little bit about those later if you like. And implementing change. How do you actually in practice build it into, say, a financial model or into a new investment product or into your corporate governance reporting practices, right? So we're trying to make it job relevant, process relevant, so that people can go to the library and really pick up information that will help them achieve a particular objective within the finance sector or within business more generally. The other thing that we want to do is learn from the members of the library, and we've got a bit over 600 members today. What are the challenges that they're facing, and then how do we help them overcome those challenges by constantly evolving the library? And so the model is a bit Wikipedia-like, where we've got the members of the library who are suggesting content, telling us what their issues are, and then we work with universities like UNSW, where students are offered the opportunity to volunteer with us to contribute to Altiorum, and their role in that is to summarise the content, categorise it, and work with our mentors. And the mentors are industry professionals or issue experts who work with the university students, the contributors, to publish the content. So make sure that it's up to the standards, the very high standards that we have for content on Aotearoa. And then we can publish that on the website to help our members deliver that change and really get that virtuous circle going. And so we're both trying to help people be better advocates and to implement change, but we're also wanting to learn from them where the challenges are so that we can start to build out a library that's most useful for them. So it's very much a circular, virtuous circle that we're trying to create there.
That sounds like a really amazing opportunity. A lot of our listeners are uni students. If any of our listeners are curious about becoming one of your volunteers, how can they, how would the process be like?
Sure. So on the website, so aotearoa.org, there is a link to join the community, and within that you can volunteer. And just briefly in terms of what's involved, so essentially you go through a onboarding process to get signed up to all of the systems that we have in order to be able to produce the research summaries. You receive training, and then you have to pick out something which you're interested in. And so what we're very much about is trying to help people focus on work that they're passionate about and that they want to be working on, because we figure they'll produce the best work when they do that. And so there's a huge array of different research papers, tools, and other types of material content that needs to be summarized and included and categorized and included in the library. So you pick the things that are of interest to you. Follow the process. It's very step by step, but it requires reading the research, summarizing it, categorizing it across different factors, and then submitting it for review to our mentors. And then the mentors will work with you to fix any issues, update it, and then see it published. Anyone who has a piece of research published on Aotearoa has their byline, so they're recognised on the actual article itself as having been the contributor to that, the author of that summary, and they also have their profile on the website, which includes all of the summaries that they've been responsible for, and they're welcome to use that on their LinkedIn profiles, on their resumes. And I think it's a very unique thing, because it's very rare through a volunteering opportunity or an internship that you can show the actual work that you've done in your volunteering. So in Aotearoa's case, you can actually show future employers, this is the work that I did, and you can be confident that it's good quality because you've gone through a process of review and following the guidelines that we've got in place. So hopefully that will help people in their future careers in terms of finding the right types of jobs and be more attractive to employers. So we want it to be a real win-win in that respect.
Yeah, I think it's incredibly powerful what you're doing at Aotearoa, because so many uni students and graduates out there really want to do something that's aligned with their passions. But from a lot of what I've heard is that it's not always straightforward or easy to find ways or tools or methods to actually go about doing that. And so I really think that Aotearoa is something that many of our listeners and graduates and young change makers in general will find a lot of value and opportunity from. So I think it sounds really amazing, and I think it's something that both Lisa and I will really want to look into ourselves as well. So now both of us are business school students, and I myself, I'm working in the financial advisory space currently. And so one thing you mentioned that really stood out to both of us is the role that fund management, and I guess the finance industry in general, the role that can play in really driving forward, I guess, a more impact-led agenda. And so we were really curious to get an understanding from your experience working in, say, petrol and in the fund management industry, what role do you think finance and the finance industry can play in really supporting this agenda and really driving the change that's necessary to get to where we are in solving some of the world's most important problems?
Great. It's the critical question, isn't it, in terms of how does finance become a force for good? And so, and what Aotearoa's motto is to change finance for good. So in my day job, so Aotearoa is kind of a bit of a side project, a passion project that I have. I work for a fund manager called Stewart Investors and in the Sustainable Funds Group. And all of the funds that we run are sustainable development focused. And our philosophy in terms of how we help contribute to the sustainable development agenda is to only invest in companies that are contributing to and benefiting from a shift towards sustainable development. And so there's a part of that, which is the allocation of capital, right? So it's allocating capital to sustainable businesses so that they can then further their work, which is contributing positively to sustainable development. Another important part is around engaging with businesses. And so the whole finance industry, investors in particular, shareholders, have influence in terms of the businesses they invest in. They get access to companies in terms of being able to meet with them. They get to vote on resolutions, to vote to the board of directors, remuneration, but also on shareholder resolutions, which are increasingly around sustainability issues. And so through to those two nodes of allocation of capital and positive influence, the finance industry can have a hugely positive impact on the sustainable development agenda. And indeed, in the Paris Climate Agreement and in the Sustainable Development Goals, the UN in both those areas have identified the finance sector as being a really key enabler of change, because we need to see a huge reallocation of financial capital away from dirty, destructive industries towards more positive industries. And you're seeing that in financial markets today, where, for instance, I don't know if you're familiar with Boohoo. They're a fashion brand, like a fast fashion brand in the UK, who were found to have had labour rights issues in their supply chain, which actually happened to be domestic in the UK, in Leicester. And investors reacted very negatively to that news. It really caused a big impact on their share price. You've seen a lot of change starting to happen within that organisation, and see either management changes, boards of directors change, share price impacts. All of those things have a powerful and positive effect. I think one of the issues, though, is that often it's after the event, and you can't predict events in responsible investment and sustainable investment, but you can understand what the likelihood of bad things happening based on the ethical conduct and integrity of the management of the organisations that you're investing in, their track record, whether you see them taking shortcuts. And so this is where thinking about ESG issues or environmental, social and governance issues when making investment decisions, when underwriting insurance policies, when offering loans and doing credit assessments for banking and finance, can really help you understand the likelihood that these companies are going to get themselves into trouble at some point in the future, because they're just generally not doing the right thing on an ongoing basis, and that exposes them to these risks. And so by incorporating those things and engaging with companies before the fact, we can try and prevent some of those issues from happening in the first place. And so I think that's the next real phase for sustainable finance, is for investors to be a lot more proactive in terms of that engagement and really trying to help encourage companies to be better stewards and more sustainable businesses.
I think that's a very powerful message, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners have taken a lot out of it as well. Another aspect that we know you're passionate about is education, and you've invited as guest lecturer many times. So in your opinion, why is education so important, and how can you contribute to creating positive impact?
There's a whole host of reasons. Like, as I mentioned, my unconventional sort of past, and I've studied since leaving school, but I've always felt throughout my career that it was a massive gap that I hadn't finished my HSC, hadn't gone to uni, at least at that time when I first left school. And so it's always been something that I've longed for and wanted to be involved with, and have studied quite a bit since that time. So that certainly is part of it for me, that there's a kind of internal longing for wanting to be more engaged with education. The other aspect of it is that I firmly believe that this next generation of leaders coming out of university today, so all of you both and all your listeners, are going to have a huge opportunity to transform the way the economy works, the way that business works. And while universities have done a lot of great work, and Maria, I know you've interviewed her previously on your podcast, has done fantastic work at UNSW, as have others around incorporating sustainability, like William Wu, and in terms of the sustainable finance course that he's helped develop there. There's a lot of great work going on, but deeper integration of sustainability into university curriculum still needs to happen. It's still not where it needs to be. And so for me, that's a real important area of intervention, because we need this next generation of leaders to come through really understanding that environmental and social issues aren't separate from financial issues or from business issues. We're living in a complex, interconnected world where you can't divorce the two. You can't manage one over here and another one over there. You really need more integrated thinking and more integrated management of these very significant issues. And if you're not getting the information you need as students to help you and equipping you with the skills to deal with those issues, then you won't be as well placed as you could be to deal with the types of business challenges that are emerging now and will continue to grow in the future.
Yeah, I think that's a really powerful message, because at the end of the day, to solve some of the world's most difficult and challenging problems, it's going to take all parties involved, whether that's the government, academia, the finance industry, business in general. And so I think it's a really powerful message, for especially for young change makers and young leaders out there who are just graduating and looking to create some sort of impact through their future career paths. So thank you for sharing that. And I guess on that note, after all that you've been through and all the amazing experiences that you've had, I think we'd love to hear any advice that you would give to, say, young leaders out there, whether they're graduates or still in uni, looking to either make a difference or make a positive change through their day-to-day actions or through their career path. So say, for example, if they want to go into finance, but then they still want to do something good through their role. And what advice would you give them from your own experiences and your own journey to, I guess, help them along the way in getting to that goal?
Sure. So I think there's a lot of things that we read about millennials and other sort of younger generations and their passion for sustainability, and employers are really hungry for trying to capture the best talent, and a lot of the drivers for business are around those employee drivers. And I think that that's really powerful, and I think it's really important that you don't leave your values at the door, and that when you think about the companies that you're going to work for in the future, if you're going to work for a company, to really check the values that they have and try and find alignment wherever possible, because you can feel very out of place if the organisational values clash significantly with your own personal values. And I think obviously it's a tough job market with COVID and everything, and so we don't all have the luxury of being as selective as perhaps what we might like to be. But the reality is that trying to find organisations that are making a positive difference in the world, that share your values, that respect you and respect diversity, respect inclusion, that those types of things are really important and will make you more impactful as an employee and someone within that organisation, because you'll put more effort in, you'll work harder, you'll have more commitment to your task because you believe in what you're doing and you believe in the organisation's mission and purpose. And so try and find that if you can. It's incredibly important and will make such a difference. The other thing is don't be afraid to ask the difficult questions. I think that what often happens, and I think this is particularly true for really big organisations where they turn into kind of bureaucracies and they're highly hierarchical and structured, where some of those really important questions don't get asked because there's either an implicit assumption that someone's already thought of it, or maybe they think it's a stupid question, or maybe they're worried that they don't share those concerns and that it might impact you personally. But if we don't have people there asking those questions, then nothing's ever going to change. And so be there to ask the questions, be there to challenge in a respectful and appropriate way the way that things are done, because clearly if we're going to meet the great sustainability challenges of our time, things need to change. We can't continue to operate the way we currently do. And those fresh ideas and those fresh perspectives are hugely important. And the reality is really good organisations, high-quality organisations, will take that on board because they want to actually understand what people are saying. They want to understand what the new generation of leaders are saying about these issues. The other thing that I'd say is, so I never like aspired to build a library as such in terms of getting involved with building up Altiorum and founding Altiorum, but I identified it as being a gap that needed to be filled. There was a problem there in terms of the transfer of knowledge from the wealth of knowledge that existed out there to people trying to apply it in practice within financial context and financial organisations. And I then tried to dedicate myself to filling that gap. And I'm not sure whether we'll be successful or not. We're still a relatively new organisation. We're working really hard to get there. But don't get too fixated on the perfect thing or waiting for inspiration to strike. Find problems that need fixing and go out there and try and fix them, and then that will lead you to the next problem that needs fixing. And before you know it, you've developed a set of skills. You'll have a track record for help for being a problem solver, for making a difference, and you will invariably start to find the thing that is going to strike the greatest chord with you in terms of your passions. So get out there and try and solve some problems.
That's really great advice. So it's been really amazing talking to you, and we have learned tons from the conversation. I guess to wrap up, usually we would love to ask our guests for a book recommendation or a podcast recommendation for our listeners.
Sure. Wow, there's so many books and so many podcasts. So on the financial and our sustainable economy side, like I really love Donut Economics by Kate Raworth. I think it's a great book and a great way to rethink the way that the economy ought to work. So I'd highly recommend that for people studying business and finance and helping to kind of establish a new mindset around what the economy can and ought to be, or how we ought to think about it. I did love probably the favorite book that I've read in most recent times is Boy Swallows Universe on the fictional side. I think it's a great read, really good story. So well worth checking that out if you're just looking for a bit of escape. It's a real page turner. In terms of podcasts, there's so many great podcasts, but one that I'm really loving at the moment is Michael Lewis Against the Rules. So Michael Lewis famously wrote he's had a lot, Liar's Poker and a bunch of other different books. And the movie Moneyball was built around one of the books that he'd written. Fascinating guy. The Big Short is the other one where you might have seen the movie as well. It was a book of his. And he's done this new series of podcasts which is looking at the people that kind of the way the umpires and coaches work in – it's focused on American society, but really trying to understand the way the system works and the role of umpires in society, the role of coaches in society. And there are so many great stories and fascinating insights in that. I'd highly recommend it, even if it's something that you wouldn't ordinarily probably listen to. I've learned so much, and it was really surprising, the great insights in it.
Some really amazing takeaways there and recommendations as well. I think The Big Short is personally one of my favorites. So really, really loving that one. We just really wanted to say thank you for joining us today and also to sharing your experience and your journey to getting to where you are today. I think there are a lot of really inspiring and amazing takeaways there for all our listeners. And best of luck with Aotearoa. We really recommend our listeners go out there and check that out and sign up and contribute themselves. But thank you so much, Pablo, for joining us today, and have a great weekend.
Brilliant. No, thank you so much, and really appreciate you inviting me. It's been a fantastic discussion.
Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you learned something new and enjoyed the episode as much as we did. While you're here, feel free to follow us on social media at our Instagram account, The Impact Project.
The Impact Project podcast and the persons involved may have positions in the companies mentioned. This is general advice only. Please speak to a financial professional to understand how they pertain to your individual situation.